Welcome to Prophecy Today. I'm Jimmy DeYoung Jr. And along with my brother Rick, we examine current events in the light of God's prophetic word.
Jimmy, this is our last program of 2024, and we are looking at what happened year in review wise, but then what's going to happen in 2025.
You know, Rick, we use keys to unlocking God's plan for the future. The first, the roadmap through eschatology. The rapture, the seven-year tribulation, the return, the thousand-year millennial kingdom, and the great white throne judgment, and that's in the future. If indeed you're going to study Bible prophecy and come to some conclusions where God is in his time, you're going to have to understand this roadmap through eschatology. We understand that the rapture is the next event. There's nothing that has to happen before that event. No prophecy must be fulfilled. Every prophecy yet to be fulfilled will be fulfilled after the rapture of the church, and we are someplace before it. Then we focused on the Jew and Jerusalem, and that will be key to be able to know what God is doing in his time. On this roadmap through eschatology, you can place every single prophetic event that is yet to happen, and that will enhance your understanding of exactly where we are. I believe we are in a time in history like never before, and the Lord is about to return. So, Rick, let's get started with our first broadcast partner, Ken Timmerman.
Well, that's right, Jimmy. We have Ken Timmerman with us. He's an expert on global affairs. He's an author and an analyst. His latest book, The Iran House, Tales of Revolution, Persecution, War, and Intrigue, is out on Amazon right now. Ken, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Rick. And once again, a Merry Christmas to all of our listeners. I hope you passed it with family and friends and in the blessings of Christ.
Well, that's true, Ken. We certainly do hope that everybody had a great Christmas. Well, let's get right into it, and we'll look at our report right now. And we'll start with Russia, and it looks like there is new hope for Russia-Ukraine peace talks.
Well, Rick, as I've said the past couple of weeks, the sheriff is back in town. Look, this latest development, you had a meeting in Moscow between the Slovakian prime minister, right? That's the half of Czechoslovakia that split off when the two countries split off. So the Slovakian prime minister, Robert Fico, went to Moscow, met with Putin, offered to his good services as a arbiter, a neutral broker, if you wish, an honest broker for negotiations. He has been reticent about the European Union's aid to Ukraine, has not really supported it, and has always kept a door open to Putin. So Putin says, sure, I'm open to this, open to any kind of talks. They're all waiting, obviously, for Trump to come into office because Putin wants to talk to Trump because he knows that's where the real decisions are going to be made. But this is a little jockeying for position. Fico is trying to make himself important here. He has tempered the European war hawk, so that's endeared him to Putin. Now, on the battlefield, the Ukrainians are now saying they've captured a North Korean soldier. So we see for the first time evidence of North Korean aid to Russia. That shows that, to me at least, that the Russians are running a little bit low on cannon fodder to throw into the fight, meaning they might be more willing to negotiate. Zelensky has admitted that they can't really take back Crimea or the Donbass, those eastern parts of Ukraine that have been occupied by Russia really since 2014, not just 2022. So we're all getting ready for the negotiations. They're waiting for Trump to come in. And it's all just jockeying for position to see who can end up on top in these eventual negotiations.
Well, as your report indicates, it certainly seems like we're coming to some kind of conclusion here, and we'll see what happens in 2025. Well, one final question from the European theater, and I thought this was an interesting thing that happened this week. Ex-NATO boss Jens Stoltenberg has been made the head of the Bilderberg Group. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, well, the Bilderberg Group is this kind of shadowy organization that meets once or twice a year in these closed-door sessions, and it includes the world's most powerful individuals, the most wealthy individuals. I've known a number of people who've been at those meetings, and, you know, they're talk fests is what they are. Let me just remind you, Stoltenberg was effusive in his praise as NATO Secretary General for Donald Trump during Trump's first term. He applauded Trump's pushing the Germans in particular, but also the French, to contribute more in their defense spending to NATO to meet that 2% minimum guideline. So Stoltenberg is not an anti-Trumper. People might think, well, this is kind of to get the world's elites to rise up against Donald Trump. I don't think so. I'll tell you a little anecdote here. I went to a Bilderberg conference a number of years ago in Northern Virginia, and it was kind of like any other conference in a big hotel, sort of set outside the big city, a bit isolated, except for the massive police presence and that it was closed to the public, including the press. I didn't get past the parking lot, Rick, to be able to talk to these people. And I guarantee you, the parking lot I was in, it was a distant one. I had to hump quite a ways to get even a visual view of the hotel itself. This group cultivates their aura of mystique. I think it's a thing with the very rich. They want to believe they control the world. The 2024 election in the United States showed them that they don't.
Well, we'll move away from Europe and we'll continue to look around the world. And one of the areas we watch is China. And China came out this week and said that the U.S. is playing with fire by giving Taiwan more military aid. This is something that President-elect Donald Trump is going to have to deal with. Can you talk about this situation?
He certainly is going to have to deal with China. It's obviously the great rising power. Their GDP has actually surpassed that of the United States up until this past year when they've had this kind of crash in the economy. Look, President Xi and his mouthpieces are doing what they normally do. The U.S. authorized the $571 million arms deal to Taiwan. It's not a big deal, but they made it into a big deal. It's not. The U.S. is going to continue supplying arms to Taiwan. Donald Trump believes in peace through strength. Having a strong Taiwan is part of a peace through strength policy. Will Trump deal with China? Of course he's going to deal with China. He made a trade deal with them in January 2020 where they were supposed to take $30 or $40 billion of U.S. agricultural exports from the Midwest of the United States. They never did. They cheated on that deal. Trump is playing his cards right now close to his vest. He's blowing hot and cold on President Xi and on China. And what we're really going to have to watch in this, Rick, is Xi's own standing inside the country. Yes, he was reelected to another very long term, but he has problems with a failing economy. He has problems with the People's Liberation Army. That's the biggest power base inside the country. So he is not in as strong a position as Donald Trump is. So I expect a deal, a trade deal between the United States and China under Donald Trump. But I don't expect at this point he will be sacrificing Taiwan.
Well, we'll continue to watch the situation there in China. But let's finish up this geopolitical conversation by looking at the Middle East and stories coming out of the Middle East this week about the Assad regime in Syria and how brutal it was. Can you talk about that?
Well, we're learning, Rick, in case we hadn't been paying attention over the past dozen years or so, that President Assad was a murderer. They're now talking about him having murdered as many as 100,000 Syrians, without much international outrage at all. They're finding mass graves in Syria that they hadn't dug up before. And the irony here is that the human rights community around the world has pretty much stayed silent around Assad. But when Israel kills Hamas terrorists, my goodness, it's genocide. This is kind of the double standard that everybody has gotten used to between Israel and Muslim states. It's unfortunate. It's a fact of life, and we all have to fight against it. Now, we've got the new regime, this HTS regime, saying astonishing things, talking about protecting minorities. I mentioned this last week. There was a Christmas tree in a Christian village that was burned. Well, HTS actually arrested a group of foreign fighters for having done it. They are talking about protecting religious minorities. And this is tremendously important, Rick, because, you know, I've reported extensively on the persecuted church in Iraq and what happened to them during the ISIS sweep. That's in my book, The Iran House. Remember the second part of that subtitle, it's Tales of Revolution Persecution. So I talk about the persecution of Christians, the persecuted church. They have fled Syria during the ISIS occupation. They fled to Lebanon, where I met many of them, 8-10 years ago. Now they're thinking of coming back. This regime in Syria under Jolani, now called al-Shara, is on probation. The U.S. has scrapped the $10 million bounty on his head after meeting with a State Department envoy. We'll have to see if he continues to protect minorities. But let me just make clear about this, Rick. The jihadis don't care what sect of Christianity you belong to. They don't care if you are churched, whether you're unchurched. They don't care whether you believe in salvation. They don't care whether you have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. You are Christian. You are kafir. And they give you three choices: become a Muslim, flee, or you can be killed. And so I have great concern for the Christians of Syria and elsewhere. So far, HDS has not been as bad as ISIS. Let's see if that continues. They're on probation.
Well, Ken, on this program, we will certainly keep an eye on persecution, not only in Syria, but in all of the Muslim world. I know that's a subject that is very personal and important to you. Well, Ken, thanks for your contribution to this program. Throughout 2024, we look forward to much of the same next year.
Thanks so much, Rick. And it looks so far like it's going to be a great 2025. God bless.
Great job as always, Ken. Let me remind you that we focus on these nations in this segment. The European Union, those are all nations of Bible prophecy, all nations that will play a role in the future. Daniel chapter 2, Daniel chapter 7, Daniel chapter 8 all talk about a future revived Roman Empire. And I think it's so very important that we focus on these nations. By the way, the European Union Treaty, accepted by all 28 member states of the EU, calls for a suprastate. The United States of Europe, if you will. The treaty also provides for an EU that will be led by a powerful, permanent president, and that person selected and put in power. These both, if not the ultimate fulfillment of Daniel's prophecy, then they sure are a prototype of the characters to come on the scene as foretold in Bible prophecy. And that's yet to be fulfilled, seemingly, in the near future. Thank you, Ken, for joining with us and giving us a worldview, political worldview, as to what is taking place there. We got to take a break, and when we come back, David Dolan with our Middle East news update right here on Prophecy Today Weekend.
I'm Jeremy Scott with Mission Network News. Mozambique is gripped by deadly post-election violence, with riots driven by social unrest met by brutal government crackdowns. Daryl Templeton of Mega Voice reports widespread disruption to daily life, while extremists exploit the chaos with misinformation and propaganda, increasing pressure on Christians.
It's definitely more of the same, and people trying to set up a Islamic state in Mozambique.
MegaVoice is working with a partner to supply hundreds of solar-powered audio Bibles in the north. The units are smaller than paper Bibles and more easily hidden.
We have another order for another 800 units that are to go from the south, and we were just talking with our partner there. And so, again, they said, hey, you know, pray for us, pray for the teams.
Then, as New Year's Day approaches, you may be setting resolutions for the year ahead. Have you considered serving the unreached? Mark Huffman, executive director of InterServe USA, says your career could open doors where the gospel is not known.
We have opportunities all over the 1040 window for so many different professions.
InterServe sends Christians to live and work among unreached Asian and Arab peoples. They serve in healthcare, education, business, and other critical fields.
It allows us to enter a culture as Christ entered the earth. He came and he served people. He healed people. He fed people. He taught people. And that's what we do as well. We follow that example.
Read their stories and pray for InterServe workers by signing up for their updates at InterServeUSA.org. You can also learn more about the opportunities to use your career for the unreached. Thanks for listening to Mission Network News, a service of One Way Ministries. We're listener supported by people like you. Join us here on our social media network or stream our podcast on Amazon Alexa, iTunes, or TWR360. Together, the Great Commission happens. Look for the links at missionnetworknews.org. I'm Jeremy Scott.
Welcome back to Prophecy Today Radio, the program that looks at current events in the light of Bible prophecy. Well, this is the portion of our program, we call it our Middle East News Update. We look at news coming out of the Middle East in general, but Israel in particular. To do that, we have with us journalist Dave Dolan. Dave, I certainly hope you had a wonderful Christmas and are looking forward towards the new year.
I did indeed, Rick, and I'm looking forward to it as well in prayer.
Amen, as we all should be. Well, you typically give us an update on what has taken place, not just around the Middle East, but especially in Israel, because that is where you were a journalist for 30 years. If you could you give us the latest? What's an update on what has taken place in Israel?
Well, Rick, once again this week, the main action was in Yemen, quite a ways south of Israel, over 1,000 miles south of Israel. There were rockets fired, missiles fired, ballistic missiles by the Houthis every day this week, including on Friday morning, that sent thousands of Israelis to shelters early in the morning before dawn. The sirens went off all around the Tel Aviv area. That was after Israel struck Yemen on Thursday. They hit the Sana'a airport. That's the main international airport. They hit the control tower and other parts of the airport, including bombing some of the runways, Rick. And that's because the Israelis say that Iran is supplying weapons to the Houthis through that main airport. Also, another airport in Hodeida, another city there, was struck. Three ports along the ocean were struck. Dozens of Israeli jets were reported to have taken part in the action. And it actually came, Rick, as the Houthi leader was giving a, quote, victory speech, saying what great harm they'd done to Israel and boasting about all that sort of thing. The defense minister, Israeli defense minister Katz, said we will hunt down the leaders of this terrorist group, and they will be targeted like we did with Hamas and Islamic Jihad. And Rick, with those latest firings, we've had well over 200 drones and ballistic missiles fired from Yemen at Israel in this war so far. 22 have gotten through. The one yesterday did not, but it was close. We had trouble again in Syria. We had Israeli action against several sites there, especially along the coast. We had some internal strife between the Alawites, the former ruling class there, that were firing against some of the security forces of the new regime there. Down in Israel, Rick, sadly on Friday, we had a 83-year-old Holocaust survivor murdered by a terrorist Palestinian. She was waiting for her daughter to pick her up near the curb, and he started stabbing her and killed her. He was from Tulkarm and had previously worked with the Shin Bet as an informer, but was now in Israel and carried out that crime that Kat said was beyond human comprehension. And then in Gaza, Rick, we had action by the IDF in the north in Jabalia, surrounding and entering a hospital there that Hamas has used throughout the war. And Israel has cleaned it out a couple times before, but they had to go in and do that again. Earlier in the week, five Palestinians were killed in a press van at the hospital. One of the men's wife was having a baby, they said. Israel said that they weren't primarily journalists. They were Islamic Jihad terrorists paid by the organization, although they did do some intelligence gathering journalist work for it. So that went on as well. And finally, Rick, for the first time in this war, the U.S. took out the missile that was launched from Yemen on Friday with the new THAAD system that was deployed to Israel in October. And that, as you know, there's over 100 U.S. servicemen in Israel operating those THAAD systems, and they effectively got it. So that was good. Those have a range, Rick, of 1,500 miles. Their tracking system does, I should say. So they knew this missile was coming from the moment it was fired in Yemen, and it can hit the missile up to 160 miles away. So they got it before it entered Israeli airspace. But as I said, it still caused a lot of drama in the country as sirens went off in case it would penetrate the country.
Well, Dave, let's talk about these attacks from the Iranian proxies, the Houthis in Yemen. Is this the last gasp of that Iranian axis of resistance, or is this something more sinister that could lead to an extension of the war?
Well, Rick, the Iranians, of course, know that Donald Trump is coming into office next month and that he has a much sterner policy, if you will, and that he's going to reimpose economic sanctions on them that Joe Biden lifted, some other things. And they know that the IDF is incredibly strong right now and has had victory after victory, all these terror leaders giving victory speeches while their people are being decimated, basically. And so I think Iran really, truly fears a major Israeli strike upon their government even, and their leaders there, taking them out. But they want to continue this war. They've made that clear, and they lost their ability to do that through Hezbollah for the most part, although we do have still the occasional rocket or something go on, and Israel has been once again bombing the entrances into Lebanon from Syria because some more weapon shipments were believed to be coming in. Now, these aren't coming from Iran. They're supplies that are already in Syria that are now being moved over. But Hezbollah's out of the picture, Hamas effectively out of the picture. So it leaves it up to their other proxies. And Yemen is far enough away and apparently supplied pretty well so that they can carry this on. But of course, we have to remember that that isn't just Israel's war. They've been shooting at U.S. ships. They've been shooting at British ships, Japanese, everybody in the Red Sea. They've halted 70% of the traffic through the Suez Canal rip. That's a major story that we're not even talking much about. So they're going to carry on with that. But Israel said, we're going to get you back. And I think we're going to see continued action. But Rick, this is very expensive, too, to carry out these long-distance strikes, et cetera. And also, of course, to take out these ballistic missiles is a difficult thing. But they're thankful for the THAAD system being there and for the U.S. support. And it's a reminder to Israel's enemies that she's not alone on the earth, and as we've said before, or in the heavens. But we can expect some more trouble next year.
Well, David, let's talk about that as we focus on the nation of Israel in this year in review program. And you often mention the phrase, utter the phrase, the Hebrew phrase, Am Yisrael Chai, which means the people of Israel live. And they certainly have persevered through 2024 and potentially have put themselves in a good position. Can you talk about what happened in 24, but the prospects for the nation of Israel in 2025?
Well, Rick, I think by now we can truly say after, 14 months of war, that Israel is winning dramatically, much better than most of us expected, frankly, especially in regards to Lebanon and Hezbollah. Nobody dreamed at the beginning of this year that Hezbollah would effectively be gone by the end of the year, would no longer be a major military force, a major threat against Israel. They're still there and they can still do trouble. I'm not saying that, but they have been absolutely decimated. Hamas has been absolutely decimated. Yahya Sinwar is probably dead. His brother seems to be running the show as much as he can, but they've won in that zone. We have the Palestinian Authority in the past couple weeks now taking up the fight against Islamic Jihad terrorists in Tulkarm in the north of Samaria. That hasn't been happening for many years now because the terrorists controlled that whole northern area, Tulkarm and some of the other places nearby. And now the Palestinian Authority is trying to take back some of that. So positive developments all over the place. But of course, we still have Iran and its nuclear program. We have the UN again warning that they're up to 60% enriched uranium now. It only takes a couple weeks to get to 90%, which you need for a bomb, if you can get it up to 60, which the UN says they have. So we still have that. We still have existential threats against Israel. There's no question that the enemies of Israel, both physically on earth and spiritually in the heavens, are stirred madly, but they're losing badly. And Iran's got to be real careful here, especially with Donald Trump being the president. I think we will see an IDF action against Iran. They deserve it. They're continuing to attack Israel indirectly, maybe. But again, if you're a elderly woman and you're woken up in the middle of the night by a siren and you're trying to run to your protected room and you fall, and that's what happened last Friday, they said, Friday morning, several people were injured just trying to get to their shelters. It's not nice. It's not pleasant. But I think the final victory in this is probably going to come in this new year. But it will be dramatic to see. And I think Israel will make sure that the Khomeini revolution in Iran has basically come to an end and that the country can go a different direction. Let's pray that way at least. But we still have enemies out there. Russia and China are not being very helpful as well.
Dave Dolan for Prophecy Today. Dave, as always, we appreciate your work in 2024, and we look forward to your continued input in 2025.
Lord willing, we will. God bless, Rick.
We got to take a break, and when we come back, Winky Madad will be talking to us about what he understands is taking place in the nation of Israel, because he lives there in Shiloh. And then Dr. Richard Schmidt co-authored a book, Presidents, Politics, and Prophecy, with us. He's going to take a look at our top political stories of 2024. We'll be right back on Prophecy Today Weekend.
I'm Jeremy Scott with Mission Network News. In China, children are being barred from all things Christian, church, Sunday school, and religious activities. Kurt Rovenstein with Bibles for China says the government is increasingly enforcing its restriction of evangelism to kids. In response, Bibles for China is printing and distributing Chinese children's Bibles among the diaspora. Learn how to pray for this situation and be involved by reading the full report on our website. And why do we binge shows? Great visual stories have a way of pulling us in. That same power of storytelling is being used to share the greatest story, the gospel. With tech advancements, film as a missions tool can go even further today. Jeff Peters with the Jesus Film Project says the ministry's latest work is an animated reimagining of the original Jesus film. It uses new virtual reality technologies to immerse viewers in the story of Christ. Find your place in the story at missionnews.org. Thanks for listening to Mission Network News, a service of One Way Ministries. I'm Jeremy Scott.
Welcome back to Prophecy Today. Rick and I are examining current events in the light of God's prophetic word. Let's continue our 2024 year in review with Israel Madad.
Well, that's right, Jimmy. We have Winky Madad with us. Israel Madad is his name. Winky Madad is his nickname. He comes on quite frequently to let us know what is going on in Israel. He lives in the area of Judea and Samaria in Israel, and he talks about politics and different things involving the Jewish culture. Winky, thanks so much for being with us today.
Pleasure to be on once again.
Well, Winky, this is our last program of 2024, and in just a minute, we're going to talk a little bit about the important stories of 2024. But before we do that, I would like to say Happy Hanukkah. And in fact, what those that are our Jewish Hebrew-speaking friends that are observing Hanukkah, how would we address them? And then also just tell us a little bit about the importance of Hanukkah.
Well, first of all, festive greetings to you and everybody listening, of course. And this year we have a unique year. The Jewish holiday of Hanukkah came out as Christmas was ending. Mm-hmm. Hanukkah is a holiday that celebrates, or commemorates even better, a victory by the Jewish people back in about 165 BCE, when Judea, right, not Palestine, right, we're talking about Judea, was mm-hmm. occupied by the Greeks, Syrians, not the Greeks over in the Aegean seaside of the Mediterranean, but they had entered Turkey, and from Turkey they came down into Syria, and from Syria they continued all the way on into Judea. It's happened before. And they were becoming very cruel in terms of tolerating the Jewish religion. And a revolt broke out. And the short story is, this time, the Jews won. Hmm. And they liberated Judea. They took back Jerusalem, cleaned out the temple. And we have a story about a miracle of oil lasting 8 nights. When the temple candelabrum was rededicated. And since then, it's become sort of a nice holiday. You've been in Israel. We've mentioned this many mm-hmm. times. There's certain things that you can't almost get anywhere else. One of them is what we call sufganiyot, mm-hmm. a sort of donut filled with jelly. That's sort of fried a little bit, I guess, lightly fried, that always puts on a lot of pounds. And all over the, what we call the Ashkenazi world, we have potato latkes. I don't know if I want to call them pancakes, but they're very tasty with applesauce on top. And there's also a dreidel. A dreidel is a little spin top that the kids play around. The songs, the main observance, of course, is families lighting an eight-armed candlestick, candelabrum, one candle every night until all eight candles are burning. And that's the holiday.
I feel like I've asked you this several times over the last recent holidays that have been that you've observed in Israel. And in a post-October 7th world in the last year, these observations, these times have taken on different meaning. Can you talk about celebrating Hanukkah during the war between Hamas and all that's come after it?
Well, just a report on what normal Israelis are seeing either on Facebook or Telegram or Twitter X, whatever they're using, what we call today social media platforms, everybody's sharing clips of soldiers from Lebanon to Gaza to Syria who are lighting up these Hanukkah candles. And the message is that we're really winning this time, and we hope that we can bring the war to a close with, of course, the return of all the hostages. That is a resounding negative message, that if Hanukkah celebrates a sort of liberation, we're still waiting for the freedom for 100 hostages to be brought home.
We certainly are. So let me begin. We'll start talking about the year in review, so to say. And we'll start there. When I asked you, when I told you what we were going to talk about today, and I said we're going to talk about 2024, you said, well, it was a long year. And it certainly was a long year and unimaginable for the hostages there. But 2024 has also, it seemed to have been a somewhat successful year for Israel, maybe not in the fact of being able to get the hostages back, but they have certainly progressed and reestablished deterrence. So overall, can you talk about 2024 for the nation of Israel and its ability to essentially stay alive, to exist there in the Middle East?
Well, if we look back and we do it sort of telegraphically, let's not forget that Israel has really shown military prowess over the past year. Hezbollah has been almost completely destroyed in terms of structure and its senior leadership from Nasrallah on down. For those who maybe saw 60 Minutes last week, the Mossad has again proven itself imaginative, daring, and capable of carrying out the most complex operations thinkable. Iran has been set back. We had an attack on Iran, and we've come out successfully from two Iranian attacks on Israel. Syria has fallen in terms of the Bashar Assad family control over that country. So the Middle East is changing for good or for bad. But things, you know, you're looking back over the year and you say, could I have seen this happening or that happening? Could I have seen Netanyahu staying in power, which he's done, I think, brilliantly, even though his opponents are gnashing their teeth and screaming out loud. Economically, Israel is not suffering that much in terms of what the economic burden we're carrying. And now with President Trump's election and another, what, less than a month now, I think, until the inauguration, the diplomatic front opens up many vistas, both internationally and for Israel specifically, even in some of the issues that we've talked about, from the Temple Mount to sovereignty to other issues. So if I had to make up a balance sheet, I think we're coming out very good on the plus side.
Well, it certainly would seem so. And I mentioned that you were in the city of Shiloh. That's the area of Judea and Samaria. Now, that's also known as the West Bank, but we call it Judea and Samaria. That's the biblical name. Looking at 2024 for those that live, those especially the Jewish people that live in the area of Judea and Samaria, has it been a net positive? Do you see more of an opportunity for a continued presence and maybe even continued growth of Jewish people in that part of the world, their ancestral homeland?
Of course. Yes, I would agree. I also want to point out something. We've touched on it several times in the past, but if we're talking year-end roundup, because I just saw a clip a couple of days ago that reminded me of the point I want to make now. Someone who survived the Be'eri invasion, lost a leg, lost a wife and two sons. He said, if God forbid that it happened what happened to us on the Gaza front had happened to communities in Judea and Samaria, a lot of people would have ignored it and or said they deserved it, or why did they get themselves into trouble? Because they were politically outside the realm to a certain extent, or outside the sphere, maybe even better. And he was a leftist. He was a kibbutznik who, you know, there are divisions in Israel between left and right. And he made the point. He said, no one here anymore is supporting a two-state solution. Hmm. So the whole foundation of the opposition to right-wing ideology or settler thinking, all the, I'm putting it, of course, in quotation marks, has gone down the road. I just saw a newspaper, the Boston Globe, said that someone admitted that no one in Israel is really thinking about a two-state solution. Now, I'm not saying they support sovereignty. I'm not saying they support X, Y, or Z. But the horizons and the terrain have changed here in terms of politics, ideology, and the essence of Zionism, and educationally wise. And so, yes, it's been a very interesting year on that level.
Well, it certainly is. And if I could understand what you're starting to say, even though there may have been some idealistic people who would kind of feel like they wanted things to be a certain way, a two-state solution where everybody can live in harmony, but October 7th and everything that followed after kind of created a political reality, a reality of the situation on the ground, and potentially the collective consciousness of the Jewish people, the left and the right, the religious and the non-religious, is a bit more accepting of not only maybe quote-unquote settlers in the West Bank, Jewish people living in the area of Judea and Samaria, but also of a continued and maybe even expanding presence on the Temple Mount. Can you talk about what 2024 has been like for that faction, for the idea that the Jewish people deserve at least a small ability to have a presence on the Temple Mount and there in the city of Jerusalem?
Well, let's start with the major, shall I call it, success. Ever since the fast of Tisha B'Av, which of course commemorates the destruction of the two temples back in, I think it was the end of July, every single day, Jews going up there have been prostrating themselves, which was prohibited for the past 50-odd years. And it happens every single day. And just this past week, the police minister, I think it's called National Security Minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir, was up there and he said he prayed. It's becoming more normative. And this is what we've been discussing over the decades, starting with your father and your brother and you. I've been talking with you about the need for progress and incremental progress and development. I've never said it's going to happen overnight. And I think I've been proven right so far. And unfortunately, it's taking too long. But the answer to your question is yes, and God willing, you and I will live just a few more years, hopefully many more years, and we'll see a lot more progress. But the direction has been set, whether it's Syria, whether it's Iran, whether it's Temple Mount, whether it's Israel's military prowess, whether it's the re-raising of the head of anti-Semitism in Europe and a few other places on American campuses. There are major changes going on, and people have to be aware of them and to take advantage and move them in the right direction and not in the wrong direction.
Another issue I'd like to cover with you today, Winky, is you have an article. You sent it to me. It's from JNS.org, the Jewish News Syndicate. It's a kind of a Jewish magazine. And you have an opinion piece in there entitled Needed, A Little More, quote-unquote, Three Wise Men Wisdom. And essentially what you're saying, and this is kind of what I took out of it, is especially those that want to be anti-Semitic, but maybe they can't bring themselves to be anti-Semitic, they are now maybe calling themselves anti-Zionist. If you could, talk a little bit about the year in review 2024, anti-Semitism, now also anti-Zionism. Can you talk about that?
Well, look, we've had in the past year on the college campuses, Jews being beaten. Jews being told they can't move from one side of a campus to another or enter a library or whatever. Now, when I was young, we always demonstrated. There's nothing wrong with demonstrations. But when you begin to physically prevent Jews from doing something or to accuse them collectively of being themselves responsible for a so-called genocide in Gaza, that is anti-Semitism. You want to tell the state of Israel they're doing something wrong, say Israel is doing something wrong, and then get into an argument about it. But to pick on Jewish students and say they're supporting Israel, therefore we're going to attack them, that's already extending it like to a second agent, and that comes from anti-Semitism. But one more thing I had in the article, of which why I use the phrase three wise men, because if Christians who have any doubts about Palestine or Israel or Zionism or whatever, if they're faithful to what is in the New Testament, it's not Palestine, it's Judea. It's not an Arab Palestinian town, Bethlehem, it's the Jewish town of Bethlehem. When Mary and Joseph returned from Egypt, if I'm not mistaken, on a self-imposed exile because of Herod, they came back to the land of Israel. It's written there. So if the Pope sits down in front of a manger scene with a keffiyeh-wrapped doll as a representative of what happened, that's not normal. That's not politics. That's not history. It comes from something else deeper, and that's what I was trying to point. We need more wise people, just like those three wise men who came looking for Bethlehem in Judea.
Well, that's certainly what we're trying to do on this program, is present an accurate picture, a portrayal that you don't always see, and depending on what media you consume, but we try to present an accurate portrayal so people understand the backgrounds of the situation. People know what is going on in Israel. Well, I hate to move on to more mundane topics, but you mentioned a little bit earlier that Prime Minister Netanyahu survived the year. He certainly did, and some could argue he's in an even stronger position than he was at the beginning, or maybe that he has been in quite some while. With all of these wars waging on so many different fronts, he's actually on trial now. We haven't talked about that a whole lot on the program, but he's actually undergoing a corruption trial that many are looking at as very partisan. But you look at the Israeli government, and maybe they're going back to the judicial review situation that we had talked about so much on this program. How is the Israeli government and essentially the body politic, the people's feeling, how is that 2024, how has it progressed throughout the year, and how is it kind of prepared to face the challenges that come?
Well, I'd sum it up this way. The opposition is completely frustrated that Mr. Netanyahu is holding his own, both on the military war front, security front, both on the economic front, and now in his personal trial tribulations. As it proceeds, it's obvious that the prosecution doesn't have a case in its major prosecution. I don't know what else to call it. There are like the three cases, I guess you call it. And they're coming out silly. I mean, it's coming down to something being called ridiculous. So instead of giving in, instead of saying, well, maybe we misinterpreted, maybe we didn't realize all the evidence that it was wrong and didn't hold water, let's pull back, they're going ahead because, according to my opinion, it comes from a deep-seated anathema on a personal level to Mr. Netanyahu. Now, that could be possible. People do hate people and do not very much dislike people. But if there's no factual basis for it, there's no reason to turn the entire Israeli political system, pardon the word, hostage to their personal feelings. And everything he does is turned into something else or portrayed or misrepresented in order to get him in trouble. And so this is very bothering because it means that something, I'm going to use the word ill, within some of the elites in Israeli society, which were in the judicial system, in the media, and in other places that are seeking to hold their own against an Israel that's changing. An Israel that's becoming much more traditional in a religious sense, becoming much more nationalistic in a political sense. And they don't like it. Okay, they don't have to like it, but they have to fight it fairly. and not try to twist everything around, which is becoming more and more apparent. So he's doing very well with the trial, as far as I can see. We'll just have to wait until the end.
Well, my final question for you here as we wrap up 2024, and you talked about Prime Minister Netanyahu and how he's polarizing. He's actually been called the Donald Trump of Israel. Well, Donald Trump, as you know, returned, coming back into office. But this is a very big deal for Israel as well. Could you talk, just as we go here, President Trump coming into office in January, many people are thinking that this might foreshadow a hostage deal. There's a lot that's going to go on with President Trump and those that he is bringing with him into office and their views on what should take place in Israel. Can you talk a little bit about President Trump returning to office and what it may mean for Israel?
Well, let's take a step back. Before I say that, one of the other successes of Mr. Netanyahu was not only beating out Obama, he also beat out Biden. And that's significant for a world leader to be able to do. And now with Mr. Trump coming in and some of the appointments, as you mentioned, in terms in area of national security, in terms of the Office of Defense, what else are we talking about? The ambassador to Israel, Mike Huckabee, who is clearly a religious faith-based politician, and other people in power. Some of them who I admit I have met and talked and even entertained here in Judea and Samaria or even in Shiloh. Mike Johnson, who's the Speaker of the House. I mean, this is a whole different situation for Israel. And I think that America knows why they're in place. I think because they supported Israel. Israel has to take advantage of that and build a new alliance between America and Israel, especially with the threat of Islam as we see it in Europe and other places, for the betterment of mankind, for the betterment of America. And some of the policies perhaps that Mr. Trump will adopt, whether it's directed at campus violence or illegals or economic issues, etc., could be shared by Israel. It all depends, but it's looking good. It's looking up.
Certainly is. Wiki Medad reporting from Judea and Samaria, specifically Shiloh, as he comes to us, as he has done all throughout this past year. And he's giving us an update. We're talking about Hanukkah, and we've talked about the year in review 2024. Wiki, we thank you for all that you have done in helping to explain the situation there in Israel to us in 2024. Look forward to doing that again in 2025. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Again, happy festival period for all the listeners. Thank you very much. Good night. Bye.
Well, Wiki Medad knows it all, Rick. He knows a lot of stuff about Israel. He keeps us up to date, and I really appreciate that. Well, as this is, and the year's coming to a close, we're looking at the end of the year stories as to what can help us to understand where we are in this political realm of the United States, and really around the world. With the year coming to a close, President-elect Donald Trump returning to the White House, President Joe Biden exiting, and a new Congress starting next month, I wanted to go to my good friend, Dr. Richard Schmidt, to find out what we can expect, looking back and looking forward. Dr. Schmidt, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
Yes, sir. So what do you think? Obviously, I think the election was the biggest political thing that we can take from 2024, don't you?
Well, I do. And what a year it's been. And, of course, the Christian community, the conservative community has really been looking forward to the election that we just had. And we have to just be straightforward and honest. There were a whole plethora of issues that were really concerning to the conservative people, and I think even many of the liberal folks were getting very concerned about the direction our country was headed. So I would put the number one story for 2024 as being the election of President Donald Trump, and there's a multitude of reasons for that. We can just look at a couple of them. When we were looking at the economy, the extreme inflation rates that were taking place, of course, the open border issue, over 8 million known illegal immigrants that came into our country, many of them known terrorists, the massive infiltration of illegal drugs and fentanyl and other opiates that have been killing tens of thousands of our people. And of course, I do want to state the drugs don't kill people. It's people that take the drugs. And if we could figure a way to stop people from taking these illegal drugs, boy, that would be a huge issue. One that's just heartbreaking with the open borders has been the massive amount of human trafficking that has been taking place. Over some 30,000 young people are reported missing right now. Nobody knows where they're at. So that's just a horrible tragedy that's been happening in our country. When we look at other issues that were important to the election, the gasoline or energy independence, just an absolute huge issue as well. Fortunately, the gas prices haven't super skyrocketed, but I believe the new administration will open up more ways for us to be energy independent. I think one of the huge, huge issues for people like you and me and others that are in media and newspapers, or not a lot of those left, but internet, Facebook, whatever, has been the cancel culture issue, where many, many conservatives have literally lost their right to speak, have lost their right to have various programmings. And our First Amendment rights, which from a Christian standpoint to me is the most important amendment for us, freedom of speech, freedom of liberty, freedom of the press and so forth, these things are absolutely so important. So I think the Christian community, the conservatives, are really anticipating that this is going to be a wonderful, wonderful break, if you will, where we're going to be supported by the new administration coming in, and just opens up a door where God's people especially are going to have what it looks like is 4 years of freedom to get the gospel out and disciple believers.
Yes. And do you see a danger? I know we're all excited for the most part. Most people are probably split about half and half around the world, around the United States. But do you see that there could be a danger with Christians feeling so enamored with President Trump and excited about the years ahead?
No, you hit it right on the head. The biggest issue that concerns me is complacency, getting used to the status quo. And when things are going good, we tend to rest. And when things are dangerous, when we have the issues that we just discussed, that seems to get people riled up, which I think is exactly why people went out and voted. So, yes, I mean, those that are in the pulpits, those that have the ability to get the news out, like your show, it's so important that we just keep reminding people, take advantage of this. Don't sit back. Don't wait till we're back in trouble again. Let's take advantage of it. Get out and get the job done.
Dr. Schmidt, I'm going to ask you to come back. And I know that you have been a sheriff of Milwaukee County in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. You're a pastor today. You have your own prophetic ministry. We got to take a break. But when we come back, I want to know also, as a pastor and having been at the pre-trib conference in Dallas, Texas, as a pastor, what will be your message next year at the end of the year, the last Sunday of the year before we go into next year? I'd like to find that out. Will you come back and join with us?
Absolutely.
All right. We're going to take a break. And when we return after the break, Dr. Jimmy DeYoung of the Legacy Series. And we're talking about the book of 2 Peter, the end times, the manual for the end times. We're going to catch up with that, and then Dr. Schmidt will come right back with us at the end of the program. We'll do that all ahead right here on Prophecy Today Weekend. Welcome back to Prophecy Today. I'm Jimmy DeYoung Jr. Along with Rick, we are examining current events in the light of God's prophetic word.
That's right, Jimmy. We are, and this is what we do on this program. We look at what's taking place in the world today, and we realize where we are in God's prophetic timeline. As we continue to do that, Jimmy, I am always humbled at this time of the year. Jimmy, this is when we receive the majority of our support, the donations that are coming into our ministry. Of course, we always covet your prayers and we covet your support of our ministry. If you appreciate what the Ministry of Prophecy Today does, we urge you to go to our website at prophecytoday.com. If you go there, you can find out where you can donate, how you can support our ministry. Of course, Jimmy, as you always say, the most important thing that you can do is pray for our ministry. But if you feel led to support our ministry, we would appreciate that as well. Go to prophecytoday.com and follow the donate button.
Well, Rick, today we're going to continue our study of 2 Peter, a manual for the end times. Each of these studies in 2 Peter have somewhat of a focus on Bible prophecy. In fact, all three chapters, to some extent, give us information about the last days. So we want to begin our study today with the biblical test for a true prophet of God. If you will, turn with me to Deuteronomy chapter 18 as we begin with Dr. Jimmy DeYoung and the Legacy Series.
There is a test for Bible prophecy. The prophecy test is Deuteronomy chapter 18. Deuteronomy 18, the Lord gives a test. He says, listen to me. If somebody is speaking on my behalf, if they're giving a prophecy based upon what I have allowed them to say or given them to say, here's what's going to happen. When they give the prophecy, in absolute detail, that prophecy has to be fulfilled or they were not talking for me. Deuteronomy 18. And then you know what he says? Take those who claim to be a prophet and it doesn't happen like they said, I told them it was going to happen. Take them to the edge of town and stone them to death. There is a test. There's testimony of fulfilled prophecy. Keep your place here. We're coming back to 2 Peter. We're going over to the book, if you will, of 2 Chronicles. 2 Chronicles. And go to the 36th chapter of 2 Chronicles with me just a moment. 2 Chronicles chapter 36. You know what that's about? It's the record of Nebuchadnezzar on the third wave coming into Jerusalem to finalize everything as far as the Babylonian captivity is concerned. In 605, he brought his army through Jerusalem. He took Daniel and his three Hebrew buddies out into the Babylonian captivity. Then in 597, they came in, took Ezekiel and a number of the Jewish people, about 10,000 of them, into the Babylonian captivity. And then 586, he comes in one more time. Look here in verse 8. Chapter 36, 2 Chronicles. Verse 7. Nebuchadnezzar also carried of the vessels of the house of the Lord to Babylon and put them in his temple in Babylon. Verse 18. And all the vessels of the house of God, great and small, and the treasures of the house of the Lord, and the treasures of the king, and of his princes, and all of these he brought into Babylon. And then they burned the house of the Lord. Verse 20. And them that had escaped from the sword carried away into Babylon, where they were servants to him and his sons until the reign of the kingdom of Persia, the Medo-Persian Empire. Verse 21, to fulfill, now notice this, to fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah until the land had enjoyed her Sabbath, for as long as she lay desolate, she kept Sabbath to fulfill 70 years. There's a prophecy that was given. It was given by Jeremiah. It's the same prophecy that Daniel in Daniel chapter 9 and verse 2 was talking about. As he had his quiet time, he was reading from Jeremiah chapter 25, verse 9, chapter 29, verse 10, where it said, the Jews will be taken out of their land for a 70-year period of time because they didn't follow my command in Leviticus 25. He said in Leviticus 25, the land is mine. You rest the land every 7 years. And they didn't do it for 490 years. So they had to be out of the land to rest the land for a 70-year period of time. That's a prophecy. 100 years before this happens, Jeremiah wrote it down, a prophecy that was being fulfilled. This is a testimony of this more sure word of prophecy in absolute detail, as the Lord had said, to the day that he had said. Go across this page to Ezra. In the book of Isaiah, chapters 44, last two verses, and 45, first two verses, you'll see a prophecy that the Lord gave to Isaiah. He said, I'm going to raise up a servant. I'm going to raise up a minister for me. I'm going to raise up a man who I'm going to use to let the Jews go back home and to rebuild their temple. This is at the time of the Babylonian captivity, and Isaiah, 150 years before the fact, He even names who's going to be the one that's going to help him do it. He says, this guy's name, my servant's name, my minister, is going to be Cyrus. Look here in chapter one of the book of Ezra, verse 2. Thus saith Cyrus, hello, king of Persia, the Lord God of heaven hath given me all the kingdoms of the world. Cyrus is the most powerful man in the world. Now notice, and he hath charged me to build him a house at Jerusalem, which is in Judah. And so what does he do? You get to chapter 2, he allows old Zerubbabel to take 50,000 people, 49,897 to be exact. He takes these Jews back to Jerusalem and they rebuild the temple. Takes them a period of time, 25 years to do it, but they get over to chapter 6, they have the dedicatory service for the temple. The temple is up and operating. And so the prophecy of Isaiah chapters 44 and chapter 45 in absolute detail are fulfilled. You see, I talked about the test. Here's the testimony. Now, what about the time? What about the time of Bible prophecy? We're living in that time, folks. We're living in that time. Let me illustrate. Where was Peter when he wrote 2 Peter? May I tell you? Babylon. Yeah, he didn't go to Rome. He didn't start the church in Rome. He went the opposite direction. He went to Babylon. That's 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 13 where he says, all the saints at the church in Babylon salute you. Peter had a ministry to the Jews and the Gentiles. He had the keys of heaven for both Jews and Gentiles. He led Cornelius to the Lord to start the Gentile salvation cycle. Now he goes to Babylon. He goes to Babylon. Why Babylon? Because Babylon was the second most populated Jewish city in all the world, second only to Jerusalem. And he figured this is a great place to be a soul winner among the Jewish people. I'll go up there and I'll see if I can win some Jews to Jesus Christ, and then I'll start a church. And that's what he did. Now he was in Babylon. Babylon. Have you got, go back to 2 Peter. Let me show you something here. In chapter 3, he's going to tell us how we're to be ready as we look for the Lord. You see, he says, mature in Christ, be ready to face false teaching, and then await the Lord's coming. Notice what he says. He wants to bring you thinking into memory, and he wants to purify your heart. He says, I want to stir up your pure minds, verse 1, chapter 3. I want to stir up your pure minds by way of remembrance, that you may be mindful of the words which were spoken before by the holy prophets. How do you have your mind stirred up to purity? You remember what the holy prophets had to say. Now, where was Peter? Babylon. Babylon. Wow. There's some prophecies about Babylon. Babylon is going to be the location, Revelation chapter 18, of the Antichrist in the last 3.5 years. You see, the rapture takes place the first 3.5 years, Revelation 17. And then Revelation 18, from the midway point to the end of the tribulation period, that 7 years, will be headquartered in Babylon. The Antichrist will be the headquarters in Babylon of a one-world, false, economic, political, governmental system. It's a literal city. The word city is used 6 times in Revelation chapter 18. The word Babylon is used 3 times. The word great is used 8 times. It's the great city of Babylon. And the great city of Babylon is going to be destroyed in 1 hour. Chapter 18, verses 10, 17, and 19. Chapter 16, verses 17 and following, gives us the description of how Babylon is going to be destroyed. But Babylon hadn't been destroyed. Oh, the Babylonian Empire, book of Daniel chapter 5, it had been taken down, but not the city of Babylon. How do I know? I'm telling you, Peter was in Babylon. Hello? That's 500 years after the fall of the Babylonian Empire. I mean, you don't have to really be a scholar to understand some of this stuff. He's over there in Babylon. Now, he tells us he's going to stir up our minds with remembrance of what the ancient prophets had to say. Don't you think if he's pastoring a church in Babylon, he'd probably have a sermon some Sunday on what's going to happen to Babylon? I mean, what better opportunity, tangible evidence? We're in the city of Babylon and it's still operating and hasn't been destroyed. Wow, what a message that would have been. You see, Babylon has never been destroyed. Never been destroyed. Peter's an outstanding testimony of Babylon never having been destroyed. It will be destroyed. Go with me back to the book of Jeremiah, chapters 50 and 51. Jeremiah 50 and 51, an astounding, astounding passage of Scripture that is talking about the destruction of Babylon. It's going to happen. Verse 4, chapter 50 of the book of Jeremiah. In those days and in that time, saith the Lord, the children of Israel shall come, and they and the children of Judah together, and they'll be weeping, and they shall go and seek the Lord their God. Verse 13, because the wrath of the Lord, it shall not be inhabited. It's talking about Babylon. But it shall be wholly desolate. Everyone that goeth by Babylon shall be astonished and hiss at its plagues. Look at verse 39 of chapter 50. 39. Therefore, the wild beast of the desert and the wild beast of the islands shall dwell therein, and the owl shall dwell therein, and it shall be no more inhabited forever, neither shall it be dwelt in from generation to generation. Verse 40, for as God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah and the neighbor cities thereof, saith the Lord, so shall no man abide there, neither shall any son of man dwell there. And go from there to chapter 51 and verse 29, 51:29. And the land shall tremble and sorrow, and every purpose of the Lord shall be performed against Babylon to make the land of Babylon a desolation without an inhabitant. Go to verse 37. And Babylon shall become heaps and a dwelling place for dragons and an astonishment and a hissing without an inhabitant. Verse 43. Her cities are a desolation, a dry land in the wilderness, a land wherein no man dwelleth, neither doth any son of man pass thereby. Have I given you enough evidence of the prophecies of Jeremiah chapter 50 and 51? The indictment is on Babylon. It's going to be destroyed. It's going to be destroyed. It's never been destroyed. It says no man will ever live in it again. There are people living. The former prime minister of Iraq today was born in Babylon. If you don't think Babylon's alive and well, go to there's a great prophecy site that you need to go on the internet. It's called the NewYorkTimes.com. And go over there and Google Babylon. And they will show you a video that documents the rebuilding of Babylon. And may I tell you this? Saddam Hussein spent $500 million. $500 million refurbishing the city of Babylon. The text tells us in Jeremiah 50 and 51, it cannot be rebuilt. It's going to be a desolation. People walk by and hiss at it. Nobody will ever live there again. Babylon has not been destroyed. Peter is an eyewitness. He had a church in Babylon. It's going to be destroyed. Look at chapter 50, and let me show you why it's going to be destroyed. Chapter 50, go up here to verse 28. The voice of them that flee and escape out of the land of Babylon to declare in Zion the vengeance of the Lord our God, the vengeance of his temple. Why will Babylon be destroyed as if they have never been, as Sodom and Gomorrah? Why will Babylon be destroyed? Because they messed with his temple. They messed with the temple of God. They went in. They were to disperse the Jews, but not to destroy the temple. No place in the scripture does it tell them to destroy the temple. They went in and they did it. And God's going to take care of them.
The prophet Jeremiah gave us biblical prophetic truth because he was tested by Deuteronomy 18 and he passed the test for a true prophet of God. We can rest assured that all biblical prophets, including Peter, have been proven by God's test for a true prophet of God. That said, let me encourage you to join us next week as we continue our study of 2 Peter, a manual for the end times.
Dr. Jimmy DeYoung and the Legacy Series. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, Dr. Richard Schmidt is going to be talking to us about the pre-trib conference in Dallas this last December, and then he's also going to be talking about his book, Presidents, Politics, and Prophecy, plus he's going to give us a word to go into the new year. All that ahead, right here on Prophecy Today Weekend.
The book of Revelation is God's final word to man and the timeline of the last days revealed to the Christians. This symbolism-filled example of apocalyptic literature can be difficult to understand, especially when simply reading it from beginning to end. Dr. Jimmy DeYoung's latest book, Revelation, A Chronology, takes a walk through the prophetic book of Revelation in the order that the events will take place, chronologically, sharing insights into its true meaning and doing so in an easy-to-understand and practical way. If you have difficulty understanding the book of Revelation, get your copy of Revelation, A Chronology, and let Dr. Jimmy DeYoung aid you in your understanding of this profound end times prophecy book that God has preserved in His scriptures for Christians in the last days. To order your copy of Jimmy DeYoung's Revelation, A Chronology, call us toll-free at 877-674-3298 or visit our website at prophecytoday.com.
I'm Jeremy Scott with Mission Network News. In China, children are being barred from all things Christian, church, Sunday school, and religious activities. Kurt Rovenstein with Bibles for China says the government is increasingly enforcing its restriction of evangelism to kids. In response, Bibles for China is printing and distributing Chinese children's Bibles among the diaspora. Learn how to pray for this situation and be involved by reading the full report on our website. And why do we binge shows? Great visual stories have a way of pulling us in. That same power of storytelling is being used to share the greatest story, the gospel. With tech advancements, film as a missions tool can go even further today. Jeff Peters with the Jesus Film Project says the ministry's latest work is an animated reimagining of the original Jesus film. It uses new virtual reality technologies to immerse viewers in the story of Christ. Find your place in the story at missionnews.org. Thanks for listening to Mission Network News, a service of One Way Ministries. I'm Jeremy Scott.
Welcome back to Prophecy Today. I'm Jimmy DeYoung Jr. And along with Rick, we've been examining current events in the light of God's prophetic word. This is the time that we've reserved for a time period of looking at the book, how it all fits in. So I invited Dr. Schmidt back on the program. And Dr. Schmidt, we talked about you being at the pre-trib conference. Quickly, if you would, tell us what that is and how do you feel it went this year?
Well, the pre-trib conference actually is something that your dad certainly had been involved in for quite some time. It usually takes place in Dallas, Texas, right at the beginning of December. It's a wonderful three-day conference, so the public is invited to come now. But it's mainly meant for scholarly looks at current events. Actually, when we say current events, we may think of news stories. We're actually talking about current developments in the theological circles. How are things progressing with dispensationalism? How are things moving forward with the defense of the pre-tribulation rapture and so forth? So that's exactly what took place. So there are about 10 different individuals that spoke. I happen to be privileged to be one of those speakers this year. But some of the things that were really key, Jeff Kinley, who many know is an author, has many books out. He spoke on the Olivet Discourse. That's one of those very important passages where Jesus' prophetic preaching about the tribulation events that would precede his second coming. So very, very timely about those things. Many signs that we think are actually part of the Olivet Discourse are nothing more than current events today, but after the rapture, things will literally be signs pointing to the coming of Christ, which is just phenomenal. Another person that's pretty well known in the circle, Randall Price, wonderful archaeologist, professor, extremely well-versed on things in Jerusalem, and he talked about the coming of the Third Temple, which is certainly something that prophecy mandates has to take place. He went through, and many folks listening that have been to Israel have seen things that have been put together at the Temple Institute and the Temple Faithful and so forth, and boy, it's amazing that the Third Temple is, quite frankly, ready to be put up. It's just a matter of when God opens the door for that Temple Mount whereby that Third Temple can go up. Another person that's very well known in the theological circle, Dr. Michael Vlock, did a wonderful presentation on how Jesus fulfills Old Testament prophecy. And that's amazing. There's over 300 prophecies in the Old Testament that Jesus fulfilled. at his first coming. So very well done. One more, I just give a shout out to Dr. Mark Hitchcock, a very wonderful, easy to understand scholar, talked about the Gog-Magog battle, which certainly has a lot of nexus to what's been going on in the Middle East. So he went through Ezekiel 38 and 39, and the one thing I liked that he pointed out was that he sees that probably happening shortly after the rapture of church,
yes,
sometime right at the beginning of the tribulation period. So wonderful, wonderful lectures. People can find them in about 2-3 weeks if they go to pretrib.org, which is pretrib.org, and all those lectures will be available.
Yes, and I understand the book that we have talked about on this program, you took some copies with you. You weren't even speaking on that. You were speaking on AI technology, correct?
That's right. And the book that, as you mentioned, your dad did the most of the work to put it together was called Presidents, Politics, and Prophecy, which he had out in a study series for his master's and doctoral degree students, as well as a DVD that you guys had put out. And bottom line is it had not been put into a written format, so I transcribed all of his lectures on that. He had passed away, unfortunately, at the beginning of President Trump's term. So I added in President Trump, President Biden's terms, and all of the eight presidents that we talk about. Your dad, of course, brought out things that the previous presidents to Biden and Trump had done to basically set the stage for Bible prophecy to come to pass based on decisions that were made by presidents that affected the Middle East, basically, and Israel. So I think it's just a wonderful compilation of what the presidents have done, the past eight presidents. Your dad also tied it into a great deal of biblical history. So it's about 250 pages. It's just packed full of historical facts, as well as things that just recently took place.
Those are all stories that we're going to keep our eyes on, the stories that you mentioned of those other speakers that were there at pre-trib. But as you speak to your congregation at the end of the year and looking forward into next year, what's your message going to be to your group of people that are listening to you and as you speak and you encourage them?
Well, the title of the message is 2025 American Revival. And I'm convinced, as we talked about a little bit earlier in the program, that we have an opportunity like we have not had in quite some time. We have an administration that we believe is going to support our First Amendment rights, allow us to keep moving forward with the Christian message. And you made a very astute comment in the last segment that we had together, which was, what are we going to do about this? Are we just going to take it for granted, or are we going to get out there and really, really try and do something for the Lord in the next 4 years? So that's the message to our folks. Thank God that it looks like we're going to have a good administration that's not going to, if you will, try to cancel us out. It's time to get busy, get the gospel out, disciple believers, and let's do something for God in the next year.
Yes, Dr. Richard Schmidt. Give us your website again, Dr. Schmidt.
The easiest one is prophecyfocus.org. So just prophecyfocusruntogether.org.
Yes, and the book that you wrote that I understand, before you even spoke, all the copies were gone. So I think this is a very hot topic right now, and I really appreciate your being a part of our ministry by doing that. We want to encourage you and your ministry and what you're doing to keep encouraging the body of Christ. And I look forward to 2025, where we'll spend a lot of time talking about issues that pertain to the body of Christ. We'll talk to you again in 2025.
All right. God bless. Thanks so much.
On the program today, we have taken a look back. And Rick and I, as we understand Bible prophecy, we have put together current events in the light of God's prophetic word. I would not have thought that we would still be here now in my expectation of the rapture of the church. But should it not happen before 2024 is finished and we go into 2025, I think the rapture of the Lord is going to happen in 2025. Let's keep looking up until.
Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Jay Johnson inviting you to join us again next week for more of Prophecy Today.